Not This Time, written by Chwupa and read by Flower Parish. This is a Danny Phantom and DC crossover fic featuring the relationship Danny Fenton slash Jason Todd.
Strange being you are. God knows where I would be if you hadn't found me sitting all alone in the dark.
Did your words change? Tim's question makes Jason pull the stitch he was working on tighter than is strictly necessary, and he winces. The tugging sensation of stitches through half-numb skin is never fun. He could do without the extra pull, thanks. He sees Tim's wince through the bathroom mirror. Sorry, Tim says, much more sincerely than Jason expected. I didn't mean to startle you. Jason huffs. If you're gonna be here anyway, finish these stitches, will you? Yours are always neater than mine. He doesn't want to talk about his words. He has been doing his best to not even think about them, honestly. Not an uncommon thing for an alley brat. Half of those kids barely know what their words say, and the other half would rather die than admit they do. In fairy tales and other stories, your soul mark is a bittersweet reminder of someone you love who has left your life for good. It's romantic in a storybook sense. The first time you know for sure who your soulmate is the last time you ever speak to them. Jason, and truly almost all of the people he grew up around, disagree. It's not romantic, it's cruel. To gain and lose the single most important person in your life at the same moment? To only know for sure what you're giving up the moment you lose it? Yeah, no. The most common phrase for people to have, especially in the alley, is see you later or love you. And it's stupid, since most of their marks match, you would think people would avoid saying those things. They don't. They just pretend the marks don't exist. Jason's used to be the same. See you later, babe, is a relatively common variant of the former of the phrases and sat on his ribcage like a brand until he was 15. He doesn't know when exactly it changed, since he was catatonic for most of the time after digging himself out of his grave, but he knows that when he found the new words, in the same spiky, messy handwriting as before, he had immediately tried to scrape them off of himself. He was convinced, for the first year, that the league had done something to alter them. They hadn't, at least that he knows, but that doesn't exactly mean he wants to think about it any more than he has. Maybe that's why Tim's question throws him off so badly. Tim works on his gash methodically and quickly, but quietly. Jason knows he's still waiting on an answer, but he really isn't sure what the younger boy wants to know. He isn't sure how the kid knows what his words used to be anyway. Tim bites his lip at the continued silence between them, and eventually, Jason sighs. Yes, he says. Dunno how you know that, but yeah, they did. Tim nods, wipes the fully sutured wound one more time, smears some antibiotic cream on it, then bandages it all in silence. Jason wonders what's going through that head of his, but doesn't ask. He's a little scared to know. When Danny was little, he would trace the sloping, looped handwriting of his soulmate as a self-soothing gesture. It was in English, which is good. Jazz's soul mark is in some kind of kanji, though they haven't quite managed to track down which one. The combination of their parents being convinced it was ghostly when it didn't immediately line up with a known living language, and the fact that it's obviously a stylized version of whatever language it is, made it hard to research it. Their closest guess is Korean, so Jazz is fluent in it and a couple of the other smaller languages in its same family. Her pen pals that have been helping her learn and keep up each have gotten into some fascinating debates about if they are all separate languages or just different dialects, and as much as Danny hates his English classes, he kind of loves hearing about their arguments over linguistics. Danny is okay with Korean, but isn't nearly as fluent as Jazz is. It's been years since he last traced the words on his lower arm. Almost five of them, in fact. His Lichtenberg death scars make them hard to follow, and they aren't the familiar words he grew up with anymore anyway. Dying didn't just change him on a molecular and spiritual level. It bothers him less now than it did when it first happened. Knowing that the change was because there isn't a last time he speaks to his soulmate also helps. Ghosts, the kind of ghost he is at least, are immortal. Their soulmates tend to match that status, so it isn't possible to have last words. To make up for it, whatever determines soul bonds decided to invert the normal rule. Danny doesn't hate that he will know who his soulmate is immediately. He doesn't love the idea. It feels unfair to the people he loves and especially to his soulmate, who, presumably, hasn't died and revived and therefore still carries his last words to them. Or what were supposed to be his last words to them. Probably his last words to their mortal form, if he's honest with himself. His biggest gripe, though, is it feels cheap. It feels like he won't get to choose them the way he wants. Love shouldn't be an obligation, and he's worried it will feel like that when he meets them. His parents already taught him how love as an obligation ends, and he isn't interested in repeating it. There's a good reason he and Jazz use the last name Nightingale instead of Fenton, after all. Danny shakes himself out of his musing, so he doesn't shock himself on the newest prototype his boss has him looking at. Lucius Fox has been trying to get Danny to move to the Special Projects R&D team practically since Wayne Enterprises hired him, but Danny's long over the whole hero business. He exited that 2 years ago, the same time he left home, changed his name, and cut off his parents. He isn't interested in going back. Besides, he likes working with the Accessibility AIDS team, likes that he is making things to help people, likes that he is making things to make life easier for people like him. He isn't going to give that up so he can make gadgets for superheroes. His current project is a small motor for a lightweight electric wheelchair. He's got two of his people working on the actual chair, two of them working on integrating the motor, and he and the sixth person are working on the actual motor. They're at the prototyping step, and Danny knows there's something missing from the motor, but he can't figure out what it is. He's been at it for the last 3 hours, poking and testing and taking it apart and putting it back together. He knows he skipped a meeting in favor of tinkering, but considering he's working on something that's going to make his own life 100 times easier, he thinks he can be forgiven. Working late again, Danny is so engrossed in his project that he barely hears when Lucius walks up behind him. If he had, he would have pulled his arm down so that his mark wasn't exposed. You should head home, Danny. As much as Lucius is his boss, he is also his friend, so when he puts his hand on Danny's shoulder, Danny barely flinches at the unexpected contact. Uh-huh. Danny finally looks up at the older man, then back down to the clock on his desk. It's later than he thought it would be. It's gonna be a bitch to try to navigate home without getting robbed. The petty thugs that frequent old Gotham don't see him in his wheelchair often enough to recognize him yet, so he always gets jumped at least once when he forgets to leave before dark on bad pain days. Fuck, Danny sighs. I lost track of time again. Lucius squeezes his shoulder gently. Happens to the best of us, he says easily. I could give you a ride home, you know. It's a frequent offer that Danny refuses to take, and Lucius knows this time will be no different than the last. Thanks, but I'm okay, he says. I'll head out in a minute and message you when I get home. Stay safe. This isn't the first and won't be the last time they have this exchange, but it warms Danny's core to hear the slightly paternal tone the man takes when he says it. If Danny wanted, or needed, another human to stand in as a father figure, he would like for it to be Lucius Fox. Jason doesn't know why he agreed to cover for Tim in Old Gotham and Chinatown tonight. Sure, no one else was really available, and the kid's missing his spleen, so the more often he's out during the winter, the worse. But still. He's across the city from his normal hunting grounds, running a patrol route he hasn't touched in years, checking on civilians he doesn't know and who don't know him. He should have called Cass and asked her to come home for the weekend. Instead, he's out there freezing his ass off as he makes his way to Wayne Tower to check if one of their disabled engineers has left yet or not. It's not that he resents having to possibly tail some guy home. He's done his share of escort missions, and they're honestly some of the best ones he's been on. He kind of looks forward to them, even. He's just not excited to be a protection detail for some outsider workaholic. The disabled status has nothing to do with it. Jason thinks he might have gotten lucky when he rolls up to the building across the street, and the floor of the building Tim said Mr. Nightingale works on is dark. But then he sees the front doors open. He doesn't have long to be frustrated before Mr. Nightingale emerges, and he turns out to be the most gorgeous man Jason has ever seen. He's got long black hair pulled into a messy bun that exposes the white fuzz of his undercut. There's a massive scar on the left side of his face that goes right over what must be a prosthetic eye, as the green of it practically glows, and a dozen piercings in each ear to complement the ones on his face. Jason can't see much of his body under the large, loose sweatshirt he wears, but what he can see is elegant. He's thin, obviously tall if he stands, and there's a strength to his spine that makes Jason's mouth water. He spins his chair halfway around smoothly and easily, waves to someone still in the lobby, then spins back around to start his journey home. Jason can't be sure, but he thinks the man throws a smirk his way. Jason shouldn't hope this, but he kind of wants the guy to get jumped, if only so he has an excuse to properly meet him. Red Robin must be packing it in for the season, Danny thinks. Usually, the signature of the liminal that follows him home when he stays late at the office is lighter. It also happens to match the signature Tim Drake Wayne has, but Danny's not a snitch, so he tends to ignore that. This signature is new. Or, well, new to following Danny home, at least. Danny has definitely felt it before. He can't put his finger on where, meaning he hasn't actually interacted with the liminal, but he definitely recognizes it. He smirks to himself as he turns away from the tower to start on his way home. He never wants to get jumped, but it's always a delight to show off to new bats and birds. The time Black Bat walked him home was especially fun. It was before he had truly established himself with the locals, and a good pain day to boot, so when one of them tried to knock him down by taking his cane, he had gotten all three of his assailants down before Black Bat could even arrive. She had clapped, and then they had a nice conversation as she walked him the rest of the way home. He kind of misses her, honestly. It's sweet that Red Robin still worries about him, even if the younger man knows Danny can hold his own. A few years ago, when he first got the wheelchair, he would have been offended. Nowadays, it just makes him feel warm. He makes it about halfway home without issues, which is further than he thought he would get. The locals are learning. Someone steps out of a shaded alley just before he passes it, directly into his path, and he sighs immediately. He can feel someone else stepping out behind him, which makes him sigh even louder. "Really?" he asks, unimpressed. "Give us that fancy little backpack of yours and we'll let you go," Thug One says. Normally, Danny would just do as they say, seeing as he doesn't carry anything of real value in his backpack. The real items of worth he stores in his torso or thighs. He's got an audience tonight, though. "Eh," he says dismissively, "I'll give you a solid 2 out of 10 for originality." The man behind him advances, likely to either steal the bag anyway or grab his chair to try to intimidate him. He doesn't get that far. "The fuck do you think you're doing?" The voice is modulated and makes the two crooks freeze immediately. Danny pouts as he turns toward his current tail and, he guesses, rescuer. "Aw, I wanted to have some fun with them." The Red Hood, protector of the alley, Gotham's light, Hope's guardian, avenger of the forgotten, stumbles. "No, absolutely not. Jason is not doing this." Those were his words. That's his soulmate. He is not going to fucking lose his chance like this. He stumbles when the burning hits along his side, and it doesn't hurt, not really, but he knows what this means, and he isn't ready for it. He can't meet and lose his soulmate in the same moment. He can't. "Absolutely fucking not," he snarls. His guns are in his hands before he can even think, and Mr. Nightingale's eyes widen as Jason points them at the foreheads of the men who are going to take his soulmate away from him. Mr. Nightingale opens his mouth, shouts, "Wait!" But it's too late. The bullets are fired, and Jason has half a second to think, "What?" before a wall of ice appears to stop the bullets. The two thugs run immediately, and it's only the desperate way Mr. Nightingale is looking at him, arms outstretched toward him and eyes wide, that keeps Jason from firing after them. The ice melts quickly, but leaves no water behind. Jason latches on to that irregularity instead of allowing himself to panic about what's happening. Those were his words. Nightingale spoke his words, and beyond that, he felt them react to him. There's no way he's not Jason's soulmate, so how did he speak to Jason again? Unless he wasn't talking to Jason, was the wait shouted at the thugs? It couldn't be, right? Nightingale is looking at him like he said something, one hand on his wheel and the other still stretched out towards him. Jason has no idea what he said. Is this what happens when your words activate and your soulmate keeps talking? Focusing on the weird, unwet ice isn't actually staving off the panic, is it? Hood. Nightingale's voice finally filters through Jason's panic. It's a nice voice, deep but not overly so, rumbling and smooth with only a hint of rasp at the end of it. He never wants to stop hearing that voice. Can you? Nightingale looks equal amounts confused and concerned. Hey, Hood, are you with me now? I can't really tell because of the helmet, but you aren't hyperventilating anymore. Jason squeezes his eyes closed and shakes his head once, trying to ground himself with the motion. It only mostly works. He still can't feel his fingers, but that's okay. He's got more important things to worry about, like... how? The modulator makes it louder than he actually said it. Nightingale's mouth flattens into a grimace before he says, "That's a broad question, and pretty much every version of it can't be answered here. Would you be willing to walking me home, and then maybe staying for tea?" Jason knows it's stupid. He should check in with the rest of the team before following a stranger home, but at the same time, "Yes," he says. This is his soulmate, still here, still talking to him, even though the words on his ribs have settled from the burning of activation. Nightingale sighs, shoulders slumping and face losing much of its tension. "Come on then, handsome. I've got Chai in the cabinet and a lot of explaining to do." It's a stupid decision, almost the same one that got him killed the first time. Jason walks his soulmate home and hopes things work out better this time. The end.
Cause I'm sick of losing soulmates, so where do we begin? I can finally see you're as fucked up as me, so how do we win? Yeah, I'm sick of losing soulmates, won't be alone again. I can finally see you're as fucked up as me, so how do we win?
Author's endnote. I imagine after Danny explains everything, they drink their chai and then agree to start as friends. They end up romantic pretty quickly, but they do start as friends. Potfigure's endnote. This has been potted as an additional gift for K-Burb for the ITPE exchange. I hope you enjoy.